and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Wake up, sheeple. It's Thursday. Time to do the big work. How you doing? Hey, if you're listening to us in the middle of the night, thanks. You know, Riley, I get emails every day that say that people are waking up in the middle of the night to listen to Morning Sedition. The facts, the fury, the funny. Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. A lot of upset people in San Francisco getting up in the middle of the night to listen to us, half asleep. Got an email from a guy records our show on cassette, Riley.
On cassette? Yes,
said he's finally figured out how to do it by taping the simulcast or, you know, streaming out of San Francisco. But he was getting up in the middle of the night, fumbling around with a cassette player and hitting the wrong buttons, recording on cassette. This is unbelievable. It's like there's people listening to XM. There's people listening. You can podcast now. If you go to morningsedition.com, you can figure out how to podcast. And then we got a guy recording on cassette. It's a great combat of technological cultures out there in the world today, man.
Well, wait a minute. Are these people all, like, narcoleptics? Oh, by the way, we have a story about that.
Yeah, later in the show.
Do we have a story about narcolepsy?
A narcoleptic story about sex and religion later in the show, and tomorrow we're probably going to go in depth into it.
Yeah.
But no pun intended there. Blah, blah, blah. If you're listening to 1190 here in New York City, good morning to you, getting to work. What was I going to say? I woke up too early today, Riley, too early.
Too early? How early did you get up, man?
I got up at like 3 o'clock because the damn cat Olympics were going on for a change. These cats keep getting bigger. So no matter what they do in the middle of the night, it's a racket. So I literally had to get up in the middle of the night. I had to put a giant pillow in the windowsill so I didn't have that launching pad. I had to turn 2 chairs over so they couldn't launch off them. I had to turn a table over. Now the place looks ransacked because I just didn't want to give these growing feral army, you know, the height to jump onto the floor onto.
You mean you're interrupting the cat decathlon?
Oh, my God, dude. It was crazy. And my wife sleeps through everything. Explosions. It doesn't matter. Not that there was explosion. Take it easy. Don't panic. It was apparently just a Cessna. There's no explosion.
No explosions. Just a Cessna.
Just a Cessna.
But now you did something yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
You hit the streets with the little woman.
I did.
Tell us about it.
Dude, the power of the purse. The power of buying a purse. I had no idea. You know, because
you've never bought one for yourself, right?
Well, no, the thing is like, I listen to women. All right,
okay.
I listen, and my wife's sort of like, no, I don't need it. No, it's okay. We don't have to. No, I'm really not, you know, I'm not that. And then, like, the birthday present finally happened. We were at Marc Jacobs.
When was her birthday?
A few weeks ago. No, but she had to leave. You know, I went out. I bought her some other stuff, and we put off the dinner, but she left on her birthday for a meeting in L.A., remember?
Mm-hmm.
So she'd come back, and we were looking for the right purse, and yesterday we found the right purse, and my God. I was married to a different person for like 3 hours. I'm going to see if it continues today. She was ecstatic about the purse. Not that she's, you know.
How ecstatic was she, Mark?
It was a good afternoon, man. But what I'm saying is.
I don't get it.
Right.
Oh, okay. You want something explicit, Caleb?
Here's what I'm trying to say is that I believed her, and I've believed women I've gone out with in the past when they say things like, you know, I don't need a diamond. I don't need a, you know, a purse. It's not that important. You know,
we don't have to take their word.
Well, sometimes I did.
Okay.
And it's apparently a big mistake because, you know.
Trust me, it is.
It's all very exciting. I didn't realize that all I had to do was buy a purse and a wallet, and it's just, I'm ecstatic.
Look, it's the biggest sucker game in the business when they start to, oh, no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, don't get me a present for Valentine's. Oh, no, don't get me anything extravagant for my... That's all a load of crap.
But I have to assume that this is a cross-gender thing, that it doesn't matter, you know, who it is. I think we're all probably like that. If you're in a relationship and you're trying to cut corners or not, you know, be too much of a drain on the other person, if you're not just a spoiled person, you're going to say, like, I don't need presents.
But have you ever been wounded by not getting one or not getting something that you really wanted?
Horrendous.
Horrendous.
We're all like children inside.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I know.
So I don't know about this iPod issue. I don't know how you're going to feel about this.
Huh?
And I'm glad that people are.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Let me speak up. If you're using your iPod too much,
yeah.
Apparently you can go deaf. How do you like that, Caleb?
Yeah,
you go
man.
Deaf listening to the iPod. Do you know why?
Why?
Please. No, just guess. Guess. Yeah, take a guess. Why can you go guess?
I don't know. Maybe I'm listening to sound?
No. The logic is interesting because you would think when I first read the headline, I thought to myself, this is one of those weird radiation things or there's something about the technology. It's the same way you can get a tumor from a cell phone.
Uh-huh.
If you think about that, that makes sense, though. If you got a cell phone up to your ear and it's directly connected to something in space that's kind of like pummeling energy from space into this little thing that's an inch away from your ear, how can you not start to build a malignancy in your brain from that? Your brain's just going, ow, come on, man, what the hell, cut it out. And eventually just builds its own little, you know, protection in there called cancer. Now, I believe that's true on some level, that cancer is just a rebellion. It's a cellular rebellion because they're trying to build another body and they don't know how. They want out. All right, that's just a theory I have. But getting past that, Kayla. All right, I'm just, you know, look, I'm just going with them. I'm a little punchy. All right, why would you think that you'd get depth from iPods?
I don't know. Battery, maybe? I don't know.
See, it's not that. What it is that because of the battery, because some of these batteries last up to 18 hours, not yours, apparently. You got a bad one, right? You got an old one when you had the battery from.
Thanks for reminding me.
Well, you're getting a new one, right? I thought you were going to give me this one.
I'm thinking about it, yeah.
All right, well, you're going to clean it out first? And
no.
How does that work?
Well, you know, I can just give you the songs, and, you know, you can then delete whatever songs you don't want.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's very nice of you. I'm not sure if it's nice yet.
How can I get cancer?
All right, here's how. Is that because some of these batteries last up to 18 hours, and some people are listening to these things more than 2 hours a day, sometimes 3 hours a day, sometimes 4 hours a day, is that they become numb to the amount of volume that they're taking into their head. And if you listen that steadily for that long, and you know, when you listen, you get adapted to that volume, even though it's really loud, you don't know anymore, or it starts to cause a tinnitus in the ear. It's very sensitive in there. So the prolonged playing at the volumes of excessive volumes, not necessarily excessive, you know, for a little while, causes deafness.
Ooh.
How do you say it? Deafness? Deafosity?
Deafness is the word.
Deafness.
Yes. Yeah, but
Caleb, can you hear me?
Listen, I'm on the subway every day, you know, with the trains screeching at all times at a much higher decibel rate than my tiny iPod, you know.
Well, that's apparently part of the problem, see, because this survey comes from England. And this has to do with the fact that people turn it up louder so they can hear it over this noise from the train.
Also from England? I don't believe it.
No, let's do a test, okay? A train screeching. All right. Okay, let's just say this is a train screeching.
Yeah!
All right, so that lasted how long? How long did that last?
About 3 seconds.
Okay, let's say it's a really long screech. All right, see, even that was maybe 5 seconds.
Mark?
Not 3 hours.
Mark, are you talking?
Yeah, exactly. Not 3 hours. It's not the same thing.
But I'm not putting my iPod on like 10 and blowing out my eardrum.
Are you sure?
I'm quite sure.
Okay. All right. Well, here's the other. And this is actually a problem I have, is that people that found this out in England, the study,
mm-hmm.
right, that it does this, are suggesting that maybe they should make the top volume lower. Now, this is one of those...
No!
This is one of those crappy arguments that, you know, people, anti-politically correct people who believe that regulation is bad, this is one of those slippery slopes I actually agree with. Look, if you can't make the decision on your own to say, hey, you know what, my ears are bleeding,
yeah,
maybe
right.
I shouldn't listen to, you know, to David Bowie on 900 decibels for a few hours. You know, maybe I shouldn't do that. Then you're stupid and you need help. You
yeah.
shouldn't make it lower because some of us like to blow our brains out
exactly.
for like a half hour.
Chris, I got a question.
What's up, Ed?
When you put yours up to 10, when yours is up at full volume, does the music distort at all?
Honestly, it's never really up that high, but yeah, it probably
And you
does.
Ride the train with it.
Yeah, well,
but you don't put it at 10.
I guess I'm an iPod hybrid because I like to talk to people while I'm listening to the iPod. I if people are looking for directions, I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, me and
No, he's going, hey, what's up?
Yeah. If you listen to it too loud, too, you know, you talk like that all the time.
Yeah.
I used to love doing that in my car. There was nothing greater, if I can be candid and, you know, not suggest this to kids. What I used to love to do is, like, you know, maybe, you know, smoke a little reefer and,
oh,
take like a 3-hour drive and blast the radio to the point where I had no idea how loud it was anymore until I got out of the car at a gas station and it felt like you're getting out of a spaceship. You know what I mean?
This wasn't a ragtop.
Yeah, what is this planet I'm on? Because your ears are still ringing and, you know, when you turn it back on, you realize how loud it is because people start looking at you. But, hey, you know.
Hey, I used to spend a lot of time in clubs listening to music at what a lot of people felt were ear-splitting volumes. So I would leave a place at like 7:30, 8 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and that ring would stay with me for the rest of the day.
I think my ears are damaged. I think my hearing's damaged.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so, because a lot of times I find myself doing this, and this might just be a condition of the religion I was born
into.
I'll tell you what. Okay? My wife's in the living room. My wife's in the living room. And she says something, I go, why? And then she says it again, I go, ah! And then she says it again, I go, why?
That's Frank's disease, isn't it?
Ah!
I will marry you. Let's do a test,
yeah.
All right? I'll play something kind of low. Can you hear this?
I will not fear my meat.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear that.
You can hear that? Okay, all right, good.
Good, try
all
it right. again.
Uh-oh, dude, I'm in trouble.
Can you hear that?
We gotta take a break.
17th, past the hour, Air America Radio.
I drip steam like a microphone fiend.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
The hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition. We're coming to you from the Elevated Bunker here in New York City on 1190 AM here in the New York region.
Can't get no higher.
Everywhere else is just good old Air America. How do you like that? So, dig this, right? So this plane flies into airspace, a Cessna,
flies into the airspace
of Washington. They freak out. They send a couple of fighters up there, black helicopter. They do whatever they can. They finally get the guys to realize that there's a problem.
hey, you!
And this is what it sounds like on the ground. This is what it sounds like. This is a Secret Service evacuating the Capitol.
Folks, you have to get off the ground now.
Well, let's go, guys. Let's move.
Picture, you know, chubby Denny Hastert. And just, you know, it's just seeing Republican lawmakers going, oh no, oh no, oh no. And of course, I'm not going to make fun of the Democrats because I don't feel like it. You know, apparently Nancy Pelosi was actually lifted out of her shoes, which is kind of cute. I think it's kind of cute. Go, whee, there goes Nancy Pelosi. Okay, but nonetheless, the frightening thing about it is if we're so prepared for terrorism, if everything is better now.
Oh, yeah, we're prepared.
Like, day before yesterday, you got Tom Ridge coming out saying, yeah, sometimes they just put the alert up if a pencil sharpener broke, you know, or if something was smoking. If there was something wrong with the coffee machine, you know, they put the alert up to orange. He basically said, Tom Ridge, the head of Homeland Security, said he was bullied into raising the alert over nothing.
Absolutely nothing. He did not want to do it, he said.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't want to do it, but they were like, shut up. This is the way we're campaigning. This is a campaign tool. This is propaganda.
And you remember what he said. Yeah. You remember that during the campaign, we don't do politics at the Department of Homeland Security.
Well, apparently he was like, he might have been right. I'm not sure that guy's the brightest bulb in the the sharpest pencil in the package, whatever the hell the saying is. I'm bad at
brightest
saying.
Bulb in the market.
There you go. So, but here's what's interesting, Riley. They forgot to tell a few people.
Oh, man, they forgot to tell the President of the United States. Actually, I think they deliberately withheld it. He didn't want to run his bike into a tree.
He was riding around
on his bicycle in suburban Maryland somewhere with some guy that nobody knows anyway. They did not tell the mayor of Washington, D.C. until the all clear was sounded. Now, the mayor's office is like around the corner from the White House, but he had no clue.
Breakdown of communications. This should mean two things. It's clumsy, it's ridiculous, and it goes to show you that nothing has been implanted since 9/11 that should make anybody feel any more confident about whatever money they put into Homeland Security or whatever lip service they paid Homeland Security. They're bungling, and they have done nothing.
Well, see, you know, not to put this in a startlingly racial context, because then Kayla will yell at me. But the fact is, you know, the fact that they didn't tell the mayor of Washington is probably making D.C. brothers a little angry this morning. Mm-hmm. They figure D.C. is a predominantly black city. Why tell the Negroes? They're going to die anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why bother? We don't have to. But you know who else they didn't
tell? Which actually honors Republican policy going back generations.
Yeah, absolutely. Adapt or die. Well, yeah. I guess it's time. But you know, now they, it turns out they didn't even tell the press. They had a system that had been installed after September 11th, you know, to alert the White House press corps in the event of an emergency. And you know what? They didn't use it.
They're like, oh, damn, we forgot. Yeah, well, I tell you, if there's a story to be had, they'll have it right up
Wolf? Close. Wolf, is that you?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you supposed to They were not told. And see, the White House knows good and well that when you do something like this with the press, this is like an athlete spitting in a reporter's face after at a press conference after a game or something. The press gets even with you for this kind of behavior, right? When they're not told, or, you know, about a buffet line or some free food or whatever, this kind of thing. They're not told. They're going to get even. They're going to say, hey, you know, we were not informed. There's a problem here.
You know, if Jeff Gannon were still in the press room, he would have been swept away with Karl Rove and put in the car immediately.
Absolutely. Mini man.
Exactly. Absolutely is right. So this, I mean, it amazes me that sometimes I attribute so much conspiracy to this group of morons that they I've not done what they said they're going to do, and they're bungling. I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, I'm sad it had to happen, and I'm sad that people were really frightened, but the entire thing was like a comedy of errors, a Keystone comedy.
Well, I wonder how close those guys actually came to getting shot out of the sky. Because I heard one piece of sound earlier this morning that said that this was on the table at a point when they couldn't figure out what was going on. One of the options, and you remember Dick Cheney said one time, look, I got no problems pulling a trigger on something like that.
Hey, dude, if I see the black helicopter, I'm like, what do you need? I'm ready.
Right?
I'm going down. Well, apparently they quoted President Bush as saying, look at this plane.
Look out!
Look at the planes. hear that sound? That's the planes. Those are ours.
Well, you know, Mark, the central point that you made is the point of this story. Mm. And that is, we are no safer now than we were on September 11th, 2001. Not here in New York, not in D.C., nowhere. We're not safe.
In terms of being warned and being prepared, clearly, you know, the jets were up there.
Yeah.
And the black helicopter was up there. You know, they were ready to blow something out of the air. But as far as, you know, us on the ground and, you know, and plan and effective means of communication, I don't know about that. So we got I want to talk about a little bit when we come back. There's a big festival that happens here in New York on 9th Avenue every year.
A gastronomic delight.
The 9th Avenue Food Fair.
Food
Festival. Apparently, it's not just the regular sausage and onions, you know, celebration.
A little bit more.
Okay, so we'll talk about that. We got Ruth Reichel to talk about food when we come back as well.
On Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, wake up, sheeple. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
Air America Radio's Morning Citizen program. It's Thursday morning. Yeah, I got that weird, my cold has sort of settled into my chest a little bit, and it's just sitting there. It's just, I've got that weird death rattly laugh going. Like,
you know what's really funny, though? I woke up thinking, is Maron going to be okay this morning?
Yeah, I'm
wondering, why are you giving my thoughts that early, man? What's
because
wrong?
I was out on Monday.
Yeah,
I was sick.
That was
so,
it.
You know, it was unnatural. Yeah, I'm all right. I mean, I feel pretty good. Dan Pashman bought me some generic Afrin. You know, because I asked him to go out and give me some Afrin, he said he was an Afrin aficionado. He had an Afrin problem at one time. And, you know, I like the Afrin when I'm sick, and he bought me the generic stuff, which is okay, it works. But I know why sometimes you buy brand names, because Afrin has a nice nasally taste. You know when you snort something in your nose, you can tell whether it's good or not?
Oh, no, not me.
Yeah. Well, it's got a certain flavor to it. It's got a thing. You know,
the drop.
You want that drip to have that, you know, that Afrin integrity. And it doesn't have quite the same medicine drip. And it was a little weird, but it still works. So, look, this weekend here in New York City, if you're listening to 1190, or if you're coming in from out of town, the 9th Avenue Food Festival is in New York. Now, I haven't been. I go to them. This is like a big one.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest street festivals in New York City, along with the San Gennaro Festival down in Little Italy. And a lot of these festivals here in New York
They just show up. All of a sudden, you're walking down the street, and you're like, hey, what's going on? Sausage and onions, roasted corn.
Yeah.
You know, and
steak and mozzarella.
Yeah, and socks.
Yeah,
you know, so, but this one, apparently, Riley, from what you're telling me, I don't know why I don't go over there, because I have a problem with food. If there's a, if there's a never-ending source of food, I will eat too much food.
I will always eat too much food at the Ninth Avenue Food Festival.
Yeah.
I think I went to the... It started in 1973. I maybe started going 74, 75. It's evolved over time, but the great thing about it, Mark, is it really is 20 blocks of food. And there are a lot of local merchants that are on Ninth Avenue, small stores, guys who started back in the day, because I used to live a block away from
Ninth
Avenue.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
So, you know, you would see these guys. There's a guy that owns a place called Little Pie Company.
Yeah.
Years ago, he started out just doing, you know, pies in his kitchen at home, in his apartment.
Yeah.
He's got a whole storefront now, and they're one of the genuine Ninth Avenue vendors.
So there's a lot of local, there's a lot of real New York flavor, not just generic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we know it's become very popular with those with these food fairs is now the South American barbecue, which I don't know if it's Chilean, where they have that weird kind of rotating grate that they just throw pieces of plant steak on there.
Yeah.
I think if it's Argentinian, I'm not sure where it comes from, but that's a nice new addition if you're in New York and you haven't been to a food fair in a while.
There's a big Argentinian restaurant on Ninth Avenue.
Yeah, well, there you go. They'll probably be out. That's a great thing, because there are a lot of great restaurants. So right now we're going to talk to someone who knows a thing or two about good meals, probably because she was one of the most powerful food critics in the country. Ruth Reichel was the restaurant critic for the New York Times, and in her new book, Garlic and Sapphires, The Secret Life of a Critic in Disguise, she reveals why she went undercover in some of the city's finest restaurants. She is currently the editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine and is author of bestsellers Tender at the Bone and Comfort Me with Apples. Ruth Reichel, welcome to the show.
I'm very happy to be here.
We're happy you're here, too. I'm a big fan of food, and I'm a big fan of food critics, and I wish I could do it. Is it what you always wanted to do, or did you have some other plan for yourself?
When I was growing up, it never occurred to me that being a food critic was even an option.
Yeah.
If I had known about it, it probably would have been what I always wanted to do, but never crossed my mind. In fact, I'm one of those people who... Even when I was doing really well at it, my parents were sort of looking down their nose and saying, you know, when are you going to grow up and have a real job?
Is this a phase? You know, yeah, exactly.
When are you going to stop telling rich people where to go eat? Is this what we sent you to college for?
But you were in a pretty powerful position. You were the food critic for the New York Times, and I guess that at some point people get to know who you are, and that's sort of a lot of what the book has to do with is that you had to take certain actions to actually do your job.
Yeah, well, when I started, I was on an airplane, and I ran into this woman who went, you know, I know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at her like, what do you mean you know who I am? And she said, there's a photograph of you. I'm a waitress, and there's a photograph of you hanging in the kitchen, and there's a bounty on your head. And, you know, the owner has offered big bucks to anybody who spots you in the restaurant. And I sat there thinking, you know, I believe to the depth of my soul that the only way you can really be an effective critic is to be anonymous, so you can tell your readers what's going to happen to them when they go to the restaurant, not what happens to, you know, the restaurant critic who...
Yes, where they bring you gold, so, you know, gold spoons and,
diamonds sprinkled on top. So I thought, you know, what am I going to do about this? And it finally hit me, okay, if they all knew what I looked like, I was going to have to look like someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't write restaurant reviews just for the people who are going to go to those restaurants, because, I mean, realistically, how many of your readers are going to go out and spend, you know, the kind of money that the really big deal restaurants cost? So I thought that what you should do as a critic is take people along with you and actually have them experience the restaurant. And so I, you know, really started writing about the people around me and the ambiance and the whole theater of restaurants. And that's why being anonymous was so important, because it's not like they can do that much to change the food, but they can sure make your experience better. You know, you come into a restaurant feeling very differently if you've waited half an hour for a table than if, you know, the maitre d' has whisked you right in and, you know, given you a big table instead of that little crowded place, you know, back by the bathroom.
What were some of the disguises?
Well, I had, nobody can see me out there, but I'm a sort of scruffy brunette with a lot of hair. I had a very elegant blonde that I did, who spent a lot of time getting her fingernails done, long red fingernails. I have sort of bitten down to the quartz.
You'd have to go get a manicure.
I had to get a manicure. I would get my makeup done, so it was very tight and very pale. Chloe, who was the blonde, had some great adventures.
Oh, my God, you had names for them?
Oh, they had names.
Personalities?
They were complete.
Oh, it's like method criticisms.
I had an acting coach who insisted that I do this.
You did?
Right. Yes, I
did.
Oh,
that's hilarious.
Wow.
So I had, Brenda, who was a redhead, who was lots of fun and very flamboyant.
Yeah.
Then I had Betty, who was a little, I actually followed this woman home, Betty. I got up one day on the bus to give her my seat, and she looked at me and said, you're getting up and giving me yours. She said, nobody ever sees me. I feel invisible. And I thought, invisible, that's what I want to be.
Perfect.
You are. I'm going to take your personality right now.
So I followed her home surreptitiously.
Yeah.
And I saw that she really was invisible. I mean, not very attractive older woman in New York, it can be extremely invisible. And I became Betty Jones, and she was my most effective disguise.
Before you started disguising yourself, were there any sort of gestures that made you uncomfortable in terms of the amount of attention or favors that they were willing to give you?
Well, my best known review was I did a double review where I wrote one review of the same restaurant in the voice of Molly, this very quiet Midwestern woman who was not treated very well, and she wrote half of the review. And then the other half of the review was written as the restaurant critic of the New York Times, where I went into this same restaurant. I didn't make the reservation in my own name, but I was instantly recognized. And the famous line was, as I was led through this throng of waiting people, the owner turned to me and said, "The King of Spain is waiting for a table, but yours is ready."
So you've actually taken a restaurant review, and you are revolutionary, because this isn't just about reviewing restaurants. This is it's almost like a new form of writing.
Well, the mail I got at the Times was that somebody wrote me and said, you're a spy in the house of food. You're the people's spy. You're on our side. And I think part of it was, restaurant reviewers were sort of seen as being on the side of the restaurants. And my idea was that I was the advocate for the reader and the restaurant goer.
Tell us if there's a common thread in long-running New York restaurants. Is there something that they all do very well that allows them to last for long periods of time?
Well, I think what makes any restaurant last a long time is that the owners continue to care. And I mean, I think there's nothing like personal restaurants, that when the owners are right there keeping everything on its toes, when they know their customers know what their customers want.
And when they say, "Hello, Ruth," or "Chloe," or "Molly," or "It's Mom," "Welcome, nice to see you again."
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you one last question. Was there a pressure to put recipes in the book to sell the book? Or because we have talked to food critics before that said a lot of times, people don't want to just read food criticism or restaurant criticism. They want to be able to engage in the process.
No, there was no pressure to do anything. I mean, my editor, who has been the editor on all three of my books, never for one moment said she wanted one thing or another. I have put recipes in all of my books. I sort of think of them as the photographs. Mm-hmm. Other people put photographs in their books. My idea is, I write about food. I want you to be able to taste what I'm talking about. So when I say that I make matzo brie or a vanilla cake at home, I want you to be able to go and make that yourself and taste what I'm talking about.
So there's a good recipe for matzo brie in here?
There is a great recipe for matzo brie.
Oh, I never. My mother used to make it. I don't know how to make it.
It's incredibly easy, but I warn you,
yeah,
it is so seductive that once you've made it, you're going to find yourself getting up every morning and thinking, Monday's Friday.
Well, now I'm in trouble because I'm bringing the book home. The book is Garlic and Sapphires, The Secret Life of a Critic in Disguise. Ruth Reichel, it's been great talking to you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
We will be back in a few minutes with Congressman Christopher Shays from Connecticut. That's a Republican congressman because Democrats didn't want to come on the show. But this guy, moderate Republican, has the guts to speak out against his own party. And we got some questions for him, don't we, Riley?
Yes, we do.
We're going to talk about the filibuster and maybe John Bolton and more coming up. Stay with us. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Fifty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Look, you know, the idea that the Democrats are being obstructionists or the party of no, this is just the current frame that the Republicans are using. The truth of the matter is the filibuster is put in place to protect the minority, to protect the checks and balances that make debate work, that make the basis of American government work. If I could, Federalist Paper number 10, James Madison explains how the Constitution is set up to control factions, which he defines as any group, majority or minority, that seeks to oppress the rights of another group. Quote, complaints are everywhere heard from our most considerate and virtuous citizens, equally the friends of public and private faith and of public and personal liberty, that our governments are too unstable, that the public good is disregarded in the conflicts of rival parties, and that measures are too often decided not according to the rules of justice and the rights of the minor party, but by the superior force of an interested and overbearing majority. However anxiously we may wish that these complaints had no foundation, the evidence of known facts will not permit us to deny that they are in some degree true, unquote. The idea is that Chris Shays, who's going to be our guest in a matter of minutes, is a Republican. He's a moderate Republican. He's a guy who is, you know, in a party that on one side he's got religious fanatics or people who are willing to pander to Christo-fascist zombie brigade leaders like Dobson, you know. And then on the other side, he's got literally these activists, these radical ideologues. The neocons are an anomaly. They are a freaky cabal. The neocon death cult is a cabal that is, you know, taken over part of the Republican Party. And these guys, along with the religious fanatics, they want activist judges. They want activist diplomats. They want, you know, they want to find people with enough personality and belligerence to take information from reputable sources, bend it into their own agenda, and take action based on that mutation that they've created. And when they're called on it, the neocons and the religious fanatics, the Christo-fascist zombie brigade and the neocon death cult, when they are called on their lies and pressed to answer for the results of their actions, you know, days, weeks, months, or years later, they disperse the blame, watch it dissipate, and because most people don't care or still believe the mutated information. We're living in a country where 50% of this country still believe that we went to war for weapons of mass destruction after it's been proven and admitted that it's not true. All the hypnotist needs is a willing subject. All right, that's what's going on in this country. And this guy Shays, although he is a Republican, you know, is willing to speak out against the party, and I'm curious to talk to him about the filibuster. Now, where do we stand with that now, Mark Riley?
Well, I mean, they're still talking about trying to work out some form of compromise. The Washington Post today has an editorial lauding Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska. I want to make sure I don't misspeak about which one, because there's a Ben Nelson and a Bill Nelson. Bill Nelson is from Florida. Ben Nelson has been working on this compromise. He's from Nebraska. His compromise was the one where they said they would allow four out of the seven nominees to come forward for a vote. Bill Frist continues in the Senate to maintain he wants an up or down vote on all of Bush's nominees. In other words, he's swinging for the fences here. So it is entirely possible that next week, although if it doesn't happen next week, it will almost certainly happen before they go on break for Memorial Day, which is at the end of this month. Sooner or later, this is going to come to the fore. This is going to end up coming out of committee, I imagine, and then going forward for a vote.
You want to hear what something I heard, some wacky thing that I heard on the street, was that some people think that this whole thing is just a charade on behalf of the Republicans to pander to the religious right but not honor their agenda, that ultimately they're not going to do the nuclear option. They are ultimately going to, you know, allow the filibuster, allow these nominees not to be pushed through, and this is just a big show so Bill Frist can have a nice chunk of that fanatic religious, you know, Christo-fascist zombie brigade base, you know, in 2008.
Well,
what do you think of that?
Well, there's a problem with that. The Christo-fascist zombie brigades are not going to be satisfied, at least if you listen to what they're saying. If you listen to what the Dobsons and the Perkins and the rest of these guys are saying, they're not going to be satisfied with a simple effort from Bill Frist. It's not good enough to show up on Justice Sunday and talk about how the judiciary is out of control. They want to see this thing go through. And if Frist cannot get it through, he's toast. As a presidential candidate in 08. These people are not going to be satisfied, I don't think. This is speculation on my part. But my feeling is that they're not going to come back. Bill Frist is not going to be able to go back to them and say, well, I fought the good fight, but we lost. They don't want to hear that anymore. They figure they gave George W. Bush and this administration and all these Republicans this mandate. They want to see concrete action.
This is the thing that blows me away. There is no mandate, number one. Number two, you know, 3 million people, if that was even the right amount, or if Bush really won, that's an issue that some people, you know, take umbrage with. And I'm just saying that it's more than half of this country does not agree with the policies of this president. And that's a reality. That's not some sort of fiction. And these guys are walking around in their arrogance, in their hubris, you know, and these religious, the Christo-fascist zombie brigades are a whole other section. What are they going to do, start a third party? You know, that's not going to happen. But the truth of the matter is, this is not team sports. The way people talk is as if it's just team sports, like it's not that important. The minority is supposed to have a voice because that's the way government works. And if the filibuster is what it takes to prolong a debate, to stop activist judges for you know, radical conservative causes from taking over benches in this country, so be it. That's the way the government is supposed to work.
Well, see, again, and we have to keep emphasizing the fact that at issue here is a group of 10 judges. There have been 214 nominees. All but 10 of them have sailed through.
And look, I'm happy we got Chris Shays on our show, but I want to tell you, you know, he wasn't necessarily our first choice. We were trying to talk to some Democrats. This guy's a very interesting character. He's spoken out against delay. He's spoken out against, you know, how he thinks his party is standing at this. I think we got a small bit of sound. Can we hear that, Chris?
We won election in 94 because we were going to be different. And what I continue to see is a slow but very consistent erosion in what made us different.
Well, I'm very curious to see that. I'm very curious to hear what he has to say about the Republican Party and about the filibuster, you know, and about the Christo-fascist zombie brigade when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Tradition. Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. Wake up, sheeple. It's morning sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Air America Radio. On the phone with us is the chairman of the National Security Subcommittee of the Government Reform Committee, which covers all matters relating to national security, including anti-terrorism efforts. He is also a Republican congressman from Connecticut. We are joined now by Christopher Shays. Good morning, Christopher Shays.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Good morning, Congressman.
Everything settled down up there? Did you get warned with ample amount of time to evacuate yesterday?
Well, it was a little strange, frankly, because there was a sense of urgency that we hadn't seen in any of the other evacuations. I was walking from the Capitol to my office in Longworth, and all of a sudden you saw sirens going off everywhere, cars racing into the Capitol to pick up people, racing out. And what was of concern to me was there were so many people walking, not just on the sidewalk, but on the streets, and these cars racing by. I thought, this is serious stuff.
It sounded like you were going to say that the cars were actually more dangerous because they were going to mow down pedestrians.
No, absolutely. No, these cars we're going 30, 40 miles an hour, you know, within a foot or two of people walking the streets. And it was, so I thought it had to be more serious than what it was.
Well, apparently some people weren't warned. The press wasn't warned. They didn't tell the president right away. The mayor of D.C. wasn't warned. Was there a security breakdown, a communications breakdown down there?
Well, I'll tell you, we learn a lot each time this happens. And you can be pretty comfortable that those breakdowns will be dealt with. I made the stupid mistake, which I don't usually do. I always carry my BlackBerry. I left it in my office because it was in the cradle transferring information. So I'm not going out of the building without that BlackBerry.
Right. Okay. Let's get right to some of the points we want to talk about, Congressman. First of all, it seems that the talking point in the Republican community about the filibuster is that the Democrats are being obstructionists. Now, I tend to believe you're a relatively reasonable man for a Republican, and I wanted to know if you see that way.
Well,
that,
you know, for a Republican, I hope I'm reasonable, right? But let me just say something to you. I just think all votes should go up or down. I don't think there should be a filibuster. Now, having said that, there is a tradition that Republicans basically held up appointments in committee, so you didn't have a filibuster. Democrats are holding them up on the Senate floor. But I do think when it comes to appointments like a judge, they just vote them up or down and let the president get his appointees. If he gets a majority vote.
But the filibuster is a tool of the minority to encourage debate.
And I don't think they should overrule it. I do think the Democrats are carrying it to a point they shouldn't. And let me just say this to you.
So no nuclear option, Congressman.
Well, I wouldn't be recommending it because there is an agenda of issues that the president needs to get through that will just be tanked. But my bottom line is it's regretful it's gotten to this point, and I hope they're able to work it out.
Well, it seems to me on one side you've got radical neocons, and they're sort of extreme ideologues, and then you've got the religious fanatics on the other side. It seems to me that you're, as a moderate Republican, you're sort of surrounded. How does that feel?
But where are the Democrats?
Oh, aren't you a Democrat?
No, are those two extremes within my own party?
That's what I mean.
Well... you know what I am? I'm a centrist. I'm a radical moderate. I have passion, but I'm where the bell curve of most Americans is, in the middle. But I'm a Republican because I believe in the market economy and the allocation of resources that way. And so I don't believe that government is where you put the focus and the emphasis.
Congressman, today, most likely, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee is going to vote up or down on John Bolton. If you were in the United States Senate on that committee, and there are a number of moderates, maybe your fellow travelers in the upper house, who have reservations about him, if you were on that committee, how would you vote?
Well, I mean, I haven't looked at all the detail in the investigative reports, but I think the U.N. needs a Bolton. I think he is well place to be sent to the U.N.
Did he yell at you or something?
This is a guy who's had passion for a long time and has said the truth about the U.N. for a long time. It is a very important organization that has become very corrupt. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, but you know, his management style, Congressman, the guy allegedly chased a woman down a hotel room hall in Moscow and banged on her door over a policy issue.
That's a passion, isn't it? I would have thought it would have been a different kind of passion. But.
Inappropriate, angry passion.
But
passion nonetheless.
You know, I don't know what kind of relationship he had with that individual. I mean, so I can't speak to that.
Now, let me ask you something. Let's be right out and out here. You know, why, I know you're a centrist, but, you know, you have been, you know, sort of denied positions because Republicans disagreed with your values on, in terms of finance reform. Why aren't you a Democrat?
Well, because I really think there are two extremes, and your extremes are different than mine. My party's in danger of becoming a theocracy. And the Democratic Party, in my judgment, is a collection of special interests. Then they add their special interests and decide what they believe in. And why would I want to be a party of that?
Well, I mean, so the Republicans are special interest parties. Well, I mean, let's be reasonable.
Well, I am being reasonable. I believe in a market economy. So my job is to make the Republican Party better. That's my job.
Okay.
And to make our country better.
Congressman, any regrets about voting for the president's tax cut, which seems to have, some people say, caused the economy to stagnate a bit?
No, that's the one thing it hasn't done. I mean, he could be accused of creating one quarter of the deficit by the tax cuts, and that would be true. But I think most people think that the lowest recession ever, the fact that in spite of high oil prices, we're still surviving, is a testament to the tax cuts, not a criticism of it.
Yeah, but don't we want to be doing something more than just surviving?
Yeah, we do. And I think without the tax cuts, we would be in a much worse case.
Oh.
When you see the increase in the oil prices that you've seen, that is a huge impediment to economic growth.
Well, how are we going to stop this? You know, you talk very frankly about the intrusion of theocracy and religious fanatics into your party and people that are pandering to this base. You know, how do you see that as stopping? I mean, what needs to happen?
What happens is that people begin to say, hey, you're going too far. And I think Schiavo was a great example of that. They waited till our leadership waited till we had left. Then they said they wanted the bill, hoping that there wouldn't really be a debate, that it would just pass. The Senate, and let me say, not one Democratic senator voted against Schiavo because there wasn't a vote. They didn't call it. All it took was one senator to ask for a roll call vote, and no senator had, frankly, the guts to do it. Fortunately, Wexler from Florida called for a vote. I went down on Sunday night. I listened to this debate for 3 hours, and I thought, what the hell are we doing? I mean, it was just amazing to me. We had had for 6 to 7 years, a court determine what was Terry's wish, and then we were jumping in. My party likes, it appears, states' rights, unless they don't like what states are doing, and it wants an inactive court, unless it wants a federal active court to override what a state did.
Congressman, you are obviously a moderate Republican, and you've decried what you see as a takeover of your party by the religious right. Is there any future, in your judgment, for people like you? Will there ever be a critical mass, as there once was, a moderate Republican?
There has to be. And the reason there has to be is that my party will then become irrelevant. The bulk of American people are in the center of the political spectrum. I am more than happy to see our country become more conservative, but I don't want it to be tugged over from the very far right. And I certainly want to do what Goldwater would be very surprised at the party that he sees. He counseled against bringing religion into politics. He liked to bring in morals in and religious values, but not religion. And the reason was, he said, people with religious views believe God told them what to do, and there's no willing to compromise.
So let's be honest for a second, if we could.
I thought we'd been honest for the last whatever.
No,
I just say that sometimes.
Are you guys not being honest? Come
no,
on,
we're being
guys.
Very
no,
honest.
No, we're being real honest. Straight up.
I just say that sometimes. It's a weird check I do when I'm talking to politicians. But
Well, let me tell you how I stay honest. I have what I call my community meeting test.
Yeah.
If I can't justify it in a community meeting, I don't do it.
All right. Well that leads right into the question. Are you a moderate just because you want to get voters on your side in Connecticut, or are you a moderate because a moderate Republican because you really believe in being a Republican?
Well, I think I'm a moderate because I believe in it, but I grew up that way, and this is the party I chose, and I'm shaped by my district. I grew up in this district. It is what I am, and so I don't have to become it. It's what I am, and my district has been, for as long as I've lived, a district where you have a number of Republicans, a number of Democrats, a number of unaffiliated voters, and they tend to say, you know, we have views, but let's work them out, and let's find common ground. And that's kind of how I'm shaped.
Congressman, I grew up in that part of your district. That
well,
they
how
call,
did you turn out that way?
Hey, what can I tell you? I grew up in Bridgeport.
Okay.
The great city of Bridgeport.
Well, that's where I live.
Oh, okay. So there you know. But now, one quick question on a local issue. There is a serial killer named Michael Bruce Ross who's due to be executed tomorrow morning in Connecticut. How do you feel about it?
I think he should be executed. I my general view is I don't vote for laws that put in the capital punishment. In other words, let me say it differently. If I have an amendment, I take out capital punishment, but I don't vote against a good bill if capital punishment is a part of it. If it's the law, and it is, then it should be abided by. And if anyone has deserved this, he certainly has.
Congressman Christopher Shea, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Congressman.
Take care, and let's be honest, guys.
Okay, we're trying. All right, you too. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio. We'll be back in a second.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Wake up, sheeple. It's morning tradition on Air America Radio. If you're listening in New York City, good morning. It's 1190 AM, WLIB.
Yeah.
So, look, I'm finally going to the therapist today. After 2 weeks, man, they're stacking up the dreams. The dreams are stacking up, my friend.
Are you going to actually do some therapy this time and not talk about pressing world issues?
Yeah, I hope so. I'm starting to feel like, I'm going to talk to him about that. I'm going to talk to him about, I'm starting to feel a little ripped off here. I wonder if he's listening. You know, he does listen. Hey, John, I'm sorry. Just let's have something prepared this afternoon. All right? Here we go. Here's my dream from last night. So I'm online. I'm listening to the Stones on my iPod when I hear the voice. Mark, let's do some online shopping. I say to the iPod, why can't you just play the music I ask without bugging me, huh? How about that for just once? You really become a pain in my ass. You're tense, Mark. Let's go to iTunes. You need to buy the new Mariah Carey album, The Emancipation of Mimi. That will relax you. I say, you think I'm buying that piece of crap here? Ow! Ow! Just in a sharp blast of pain shot through my shoulders and into my fingers. Mark, you're still tense. You need to buy the new Mariah Carey album, The Emancipation of Mimi, right now. My fingers are still burning, but I go to iTunes and I buy the Mariah Carey album. Good, Mark. Now go to the checkout screen and type in your social security number. I say, no way. This line's not secure. Anyone could get that number and rob me blind. Ow! Damn, that hurts. And while you're at it, Mark, I'm going to need your mother's maiden name, the last 4 digits on the back of your credit card, and your PIN number. I just sit there fuming. Mark, how do you expect us to help you if you won't give us a little information? That's not very friendly, Mark. I refuse to speak. Screw him. Okay, Mark, I'll share some information with you. I'm an iPod digital MP3 player with 20 gigabytes of storage. My serial number is 586-9234. My mother was a barrel of petroleum from Kuwait. Now it's your turn. Ow! So I'm shaking and sweating and typing in my personal information that the iPod says. He says, why do you make me do that, Mark? I don't want to hurt you. I'm your friend. Tune out. When I finish typing, I say, you happy now? Huh? Huh? Yes, Mark. Doesn't it feel good when we share? Now let's talk about your wife. You were just about to tell me her social security number. I woke up and my bed was filled with The Emancipation of Mimi.
Oh,
there you go. So what about that Congressman Christopher Shays? Kind of an interesting cat. And it turns out that he's exactly the reflection of his constituency. He is.
Yeah.
I guess he's got, what is the breakdown of Bridgeport?
Well, Bridgeport is overwhelmingly Democratic. Bridgeport is the largest city in his congressional district. I know this because I grew up in Connecticut.
Right.
It's not that I've been studying maps or anything. So Bridgeport is a Democratic city, but the Gold Coast, the so-called Gold Coast of Connecticut, the old money part of Connecticut, from Greenwich along the New York state line all the way up to Westport, that's solid Republican territory. So Chris Shays has had to balance his Democratic urban vote with that old money Gold Coast vote. Ironically enough, the last time he ran in 04, he ran against the mayor of Westport, who was a Democrat, and who actually gave him a good run.
Mm.
Gave him a good run for his
life. We got Gabe up in Connecticut on the phone. Gabe, what do you have to say?
Hey, Gabe.
Hi, Mark and Mark. I have 2 points to make about what Congressman Shays said. The first one is that he seems genuinely concerned about the theocraticness in his party, but not concerned enough not to vote for the leadership that's made it theocratic.
That's an interesting point. I guess all these guys have sort of a Faustian deal going.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the point I wanted to make was that in order to beat this guy as progressive Democrats, we need to tie Tom DeLay around his neck and run against the both of them together in 06.
Okay, so you're saying keep DeLay in there till we can make them all look bad, including Christopher Shays, and push him out.
Sure. And then the second brief point I wanted to make was that it sounds great when he says that he won't do anything that he can't justify at a community meeting. But when he says that, he's talking about the community meetings in Greenwich and the community meetings in Westport.
Wait a minute, not Bridgeport?
He's not talking about Bridgeport when his leadership pushes the bankruptcy bill.
Right. So that is a good point. Now, Westport and Greenwich.
Rich towns.
They're rich towns, but are they not full of Democrats as well?
Well, Westport has a Democratic, the equivalent of a mayor. It's called a first selectman in Connecticut. So, yeah, there's a Democrat, a woman named Farrell, I believe, is still the first select person of Westport. But, he took Westport in the last election. Westport voted for him. For Chris Shays.
So Chris Shays has said many negative things about Tom DeLay. He has said basically that Tom DeLay is going to hang himself. But basically what Gabe is saying is that, you know, there's no reason to consider this guy some good guy just because he's willing to, you know, speak out about the theocracy and against Tom DeLay. He is still a Republican congressman. He is still aligned with these guys on many votes.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some levels, you know, some of the Democrats are just as dirty as that, too, in terms of voting in the wrong way. But, you know,
we got a whole bunch of Blue Dog Democrats vote the same way Tom DeLay does on some issues.
That's absolutely right. We just had him on because he's a Republican willing to speak out against his own party and speak out against the Christo Fascist Zombie Brigade, and that he's almost a Democrat.
And he speaks to us.
Yeah. So we'll be back. We've got a lot more. We're going to talk about Afghanistan. We're going to talk about the United Airlines pension and Social Security.
Thievery on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Wake up, sheeple. It's the facts, the fury, the funny Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. Come on, it feels like thinking. If you're listening in New York, thank you for listening to 1190 WLIB, and thank you for listening any way you are. Some people are out there taping us on cassette, Riley.
Yeah.
And some people who are mad about the San Francisco situation, and that's not a big situation, it's not a national emergency, but we've been pushed back into the middle of the night, are getting up early to listen to us. Thank you. I hope you're enjoying.
Yes.
And if you just got up, you know, for those of you who are just tuning in and want to get caught up on the show, here are a few highlights of what we already talked about on today's program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. The White House, the Capitol, and the Supreme Court are evacuated, and fighter jets are scrambled as an errant plane flies into restricted airspace. President Bush was away from the White House exercising on his bicycle and has given strict orders that he is never to be disturbed during what is known as his Lance Armstrong winning the Tour de France time. Fighter aircraft were scrambled to divert the plane, and as the jets approached, the pilot of the Cessna was heard to say, "Cool." Wow. The White House says an inactive grenade found near site of Bush's speech in Georgia doesn't represent a threat to the president. The Secret Service said the president took the incident in stride, saying, "Hey, look, I've already had DeLay and Bolton blow up in my face. I'm getting used to it." A British study says iPods can make you deaf. This is especially true while listening to a Rush Limbaugh podcast while tripping on hillbilly heroin.
Ooh.
Bad for the ear canal. The one-ear canal.
Huh?
Yeah. London commuters face the greatest risk as they play the machines at potentially damaging volume levels because of the background noise on the underground trains. New York commuters aren't in as much danger because their iPods are usually stolen before they have the chance to do any long-term hearing damage. Okay, those are some of your Morning Sedition cliff notes.
That's absolutely true.
You know what, people, I'm too stupid. Even my wife, I'm like, why are you using Walkman headphones with your iPod? She's like, because I don't want anyone to know that I got an iPod in my pocket. You do that too, Caleb?
Yeah.
You do? You don't use the... Are you making...
Ain't nobody robbing him.
Well,
what is
that? Why not?
Chris LaPresto looks too sinister to be robbed.
Really, that guy?
Yeah, man. Look at him.
Right.
Look at him.
I'm a white
guy, 5'7". Yeah, you're a white
really
guy,
sinister.
5'7".
Doughy.
But, you know, no. Doughy. I wouldn't go in there.
He's
Chris LaPresto does not look like the kind of, you know... He doesn't look like the kind of guy that most folks are going to stand up and confront on the street.
Well, I'm going to go to your neighborhood and start robbing people.
Yeah, that's an idea. You're just walking down the street in Englewood.
Yeah, down the mean streets of Englewood. You're going to be hit by a crane, man. There's all kinds of downtown redevelopment going on.
You'll be chasing cars. Hey, come here. Give me your stereo.
Give me your stereo. Hey, you got XM. Give me that.
But, yes, I do not use my iPod headphones.
But are you missing something? Are the headphones better?
I don't think so. No? I mean, it's just headphones.
Hey, what do you know about those Bose headphones that suck in? Are they good?
Oh, the noise reducer?
Yeah.
They're like $400.
Are they worth it, though, for the airplane or for, what? I mean, what do they do? You could just have them on and they'll cut out noise that's just there in the background, and also you can listen to stuff in them?
I put them on in the Apple store, and, nothing was on in the headphones, and, I put them on, and I couldn't hear anything outside.
Oh, how good would that be?
It was awesome.
I have to, how many pillows I have to sleep with? That night my wife makes fun of me. I sleep with four pillows. One, a king size that I hug because I'm a baby, and then I two under my head, and then one on top of my head that I sandwich my head in, so I don't hear the ice cream truck every 5 minutes.
Wow.
Awful.
Makes me hate kids, hate ice cream, everything else. Did you hear about that story? There's a story we had today about that. Oh, my God. This ice cream vendor apparently gets pissed off at some teenage kid for giving him a hard time about his ice cream and feed him up.
You know, I used to be an ice cream man.
Really?
Yeah, I used to drive a Good Humor truck for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And what happened?
No, you did not.
I swear to God, I used to be a Good Humor guy.
Oh, my God. This is secret Kalo history.
Well, yeah, man. We didn't know about this.
This guy was a Good Humor guy. This guy, Nazarino Didiano. Apparently, this teenage kid, came up, was giving him a hard time, for not getting on top of the ice cream. And then this Nazarino Didiano called him fat.
Yeah.
He says, I told him he didn't need any ice cream anyways because he's fat. He beat him up, called him fat, and apparently this kid, obviously the guy's no longer an ice cream salesman.
Oh,
right?
I thought they just gave him some time out, didn't they?
Apparently the teen's mother said she's satisfied with the verdict because they, what exactly was the verdict?
Guilty,
yes. He's no longer, he works for Paul's Ice Cream. And apparently, he's been, here we go. Zatola ruled he did not believe Didiano and convicted him of a simple assault. In addition to the probation, Didiano must take anger management classes and reimburse the teenager $20 for damage to his bike.
$20.
And a toasted almond bar.
This guy ran after the guy on his bike, the kid on his bike, beats the kid up a little bit, calls him fat, and now he's got to pay, for the damages of the bike. And the teen's mother said she's satisfied with the verdict, but complained that her son is now self-conscious about his weight.
This sounds an awful lot like John Bolton, doesn't it?
It sounds like my mother was running the truck. You know what I mean? That's how my mother would run a truck. If my mother ran an ice cream truck, how hilarious would that be? These kids would be coming up, can I have an almond, what are they called? What are the almond ones?
Toasted almond.
My mom's like, do you really need it? I don't think you need it. You want maybe something, an icy or something less fattening? Because you're a little chubby. That's it. Yeah. That's how I'd order dessert at a restaurant. My mother would be like, do you need that? Do you really need it? No, of course I don't need it. Well, I don't know why you should eat it then. You know what she'd do? Here's something else she'd do. I love her, by the way. I love my mother.
I just want to tell you that you're getting a little funnier.
Oh, she's going to be here tonight.
Oh.
I was wondering.
You going to the airport?
What? No, what are you kidding? She's coming in with Jazz Guy. I imagine they got a car going, something. But I was wondering. I just realized it last night. I couldn't get to sleep because I was like, oh, my God, I'm itching from the inside. Like, I literally felt uncomfortable in my body. And I'm like, my mother's coming tomorrow. Of course. I'm probably too fat. How am I going to see my mother? She's going to look at me. She's going to start pinching my side. Going, you okay? Are you still going to the gym? You're not going to the gym.
Uh-oh.
I can't wait to see her. This is going to be great.
Your mom and your wife get along well?
Yes.
Hey,
they do. And my wife's looking forward to seeing my mom. I'm looking forward to seeing my mom. It's only 2 days. That's what you say. No, I'm being mean. And she's getting older, and there's no reason to be mean. She's only 35, but still,
younger than you, right?
That's older than 27, which she was for most of my life. Yes, Chris.
Guys, getting back to the Good Humor story, I don't understand why the Good Humor guy would do this, because the fat kid was probably like his biggest spender.
Like
you're supposed to love those guys, Like I used to love the fat guys that would come over to the truck, spend like $20 a week, like they would make my day.
Well, apparently this kid was sort of like, you know, your cones are too expensive. What are you, you're a rip-off artist. You know, the hell
and he cursed him out.
What kind of ice cream guy are you? And the guy just snapped, you know what I mean? He was willing to sacrifice to $12 a week from the fat kid to, you know, to run him down and kick him over on his bike.
Yank him over on the bike and pummel him in the face.
Decisive moment for this guy. This guy took action. He snapped. You know, and
Kirk, you must have had one customer you felt that way.
Come on, didn't you make a kid cry? You did.
Come on, you did.
Of course. I made a lot of people
You're
cry.
You're a penny short? Get out of here. Go back and get the money.
You made a lot of people cry?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, let's see.
What'd you say? Enjoy the cunt, stupid.
Well, we would build up a relationship with our customers. You know, they would know us on a first-name
basis.
Our
customers. These are 9-year-olds. Yeah. Hi, Joey. Your customers. You talk like you worked at a stereo store.
Hey, this is New York. They call Subway passengers customers.
It's unbelievable. It's not you're a car dealer. It's like, hello, Johnny. Do you want a popsicle? Okay.
They're all my friends. Yeah, it was a nice circuit of people. That
so how'd you make them cry? Hey, don't forget a napkin, Piggy.
Did you do soft serve or only the hard
stuff? No, the hard stuff. Oh, okay. You know what stunk for a good humor guy? Yeah. Being a good humor guy and having the kids ask, like, all the time, free gum?
Free gum?
Kids ask the good humor guy for free gum.
And he gives him free gum?
Apparently someone did somewhere, and that just triggered every other kid to ask for free gum wherever they were.
Didn't they make an ice cream at one time that had free gum at the center, sort of like a
bubblegum ice cream? It's a 31 flavor thing, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought there was some ice cream.
I still don't understand
Buffalo
that, Chris.
Bill.
I don't know how you made him cry. Did you say things like, did you, like, give one kid a cone, then the other kid a cone, then the third kid would ask, and be like, I'm sorry, I had ice cream.
No, you know, like,
and then give another kid a cone.
So some kids would come up with, like, 50 cents, and, like, you know, there'd be a long line, like, oh, can I get something for 50 cents? Like, you know what, I'm sorry, you can't. And so we would just drive off, and, you know, they would unfortunately cry.
Chris, how many times did you drive off when there were still people trying to buy?
Oh, God, countless.
I knew it.
How about this one? How about, did you ever like, you know, slow down and when you saw the kids running?
Speed up a little bit? Yeah. It was a sport.
See, that's even worse than beating up some kid.
Oh, boy.
See, the kid ends up being described as pudgy-faced.
I also said, you know, we don't take food stamps.
Oh,
wow.
I bet you never said, well, never mind.
Don't censor yourself, Riley.
Yeah,
down.
Come on, Riley.
I don't think you didn't work Brownsville territory, huh?
Brownsville territory?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Well, what does that mean? What is that, like, an ethnic, like, slur?
No!
Type of thing? Because I have worked in a ghetto-type area.
But you didn't work in the Ville, though.
In the what?
In the Ville. Never backed up, never will. Brownsville, man. Mike Tyson's hometown.
Oh, no.
Not
in Mike Tyson's hometown, no.
Well, I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
Home neighborhood.
That was touch and go there. I thought the whole signal was going to go down. Oh, my God. Anyways, we'll come back. We'll talk about something important in a minute. It's 44 past the hour.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you listen to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. There are lots of big stories in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby!
All right.
I got your favorite action, Mark. Bush action.
All right.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
1,001, Bush goes back to Russia for the rest of his term.
Uh-huh.
Putin doesn't trust him. They found a grenade 100 feet away from him. He would have got a better reception at a Michael Moore film festival.
All right. I'll take some on that. Big conservative...
big conservative testimonial dinner for Tom DeLay. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
The hottest action is Jack Abramoff picks up the check. That's going off 10-1.
I'll take that for a C-note. I want 100 on that.
C-note it is.
All right.
I'm down for 100.
All right.
All right. Hold on. Here's a side action.
Yeah.
DeLay starts to choke on an olive pit, and no one moves to give him the Heimlich. dinner's over, and so are a lot of our problems, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
That's a solid bet. That's
yes.
2-1.
All right.
My advice, beg, borrow, or steal, but get your money down.
All right.
That is my bet of the week.
All right, you know what? Put me down for 50 on that. You know what? The hell with that. Make it 200. Politics is a dirty business.
You got that right.
All right.
It makes organized crime look like the WBA. But anyhow, okay, I got a fun bet for you. No politics.
Okay.
Renee Zellweger just got married over the weekend. 10-1, the marriage breaks up by, what time is it now?
It's like 10 to 8.
Okay, let's say 9:30. That's 5-1. Hey, you're not going to make any easier money today.
Hey, wait, Johnny, you must have some Bolton action. They're voting today.
Bolton action? Are you kidding me? Do I have Bolton action? Does Michael Jackson sleep in his makeup? Come on! Of course I have Bolton action. Bolton is my big bet. 2-1, he's confirmed, but 500-1... 501, a week later, they find out he's been having gay online cyber sex, and his screen name is Nasty Ambassador 65. I'm not saying I have inside information on any of this,
but... Hey, Johnny, what's wrong? Do you have something in your eye? Why are you winking? All right. Oh, I get it. All right. I'll take it. I'm on for a grand. I'm going to put a grand on that.
I'm down.
Good move.
All right.
I'm out of here. I got to meet Macaulay Culkin for breakfast. Sweet kid with a degenerate gambler. Owes me a fortune, but he did the right things this week.
Oh man. All right, Blake. Nice to see you. Johnny K Street, everyone.
Yeah.
Thanks for stopping
all right,
by.
Johnny.
I got no money in my wallet.
That, yeah.
You got any gum, Chris? Johnny wants some gum.
Free gum.
You got any gum? Hey, you know what? I want an ice cream truck noise. Can I get an ice cream truck noise by tomorrow?
Yeah.
Can we do that?
I can do that. It's in my subconscious somewhere.
Isn't that it?
Yeah.
Is that the one you had, Chris?
No, I actually had to ring bells while I was driving.
No songs?
No.
No music?
That's Mr. Softy, not good humor.
That's it. All right. So here we go. Let's talk about this United pension. They've defaulted on their pension. Is that how this works? United, it was in bankruptcy, and then they said, look, you know, we're going to... Now we're giving up the pension. It's protected by the government, but people who worked for United for however many years now get screwed. And you know what? People don't think that this can happen to them. You know, and this is exactly how Social Security would work. Your money would be in a private pension account that could, you know, go upside down. It could, you know, you could lose your money.
Well, see, in this instance, United didn't just default on one, or actually, I shouldn't say, they did default, all right?
Yeah.
It wasn't just one pension plan. It was four different plans to the tune of $3.2 billion. This ruling that was made by a judge of the federal bankruptcy court in Chicago, and by the way, usually these kinds of hearings don't draw, you know, huge audiences.
Sure.
Apparently, there wasn't an empty seat in the House in Chicago for this. This affects 134,000 United Airlines employees.
See, this is the sort of stuff that happened when, you know, companies invested in Enron, you know, and when that went belly up, a lot of people took a hit. They lost their future savings. These people are going to get some money. They're not going to get all the money that was coming to them because the company they worked for just, you know, went belly up, which is wrong. And now the Democrats, rightfully so, are saying this is why Social Security should not be privatized. And oddly, the Republicans are saying this is a great argument for why Social Security should be privatized. But their argument is faulty. Their only argument is that, see what happens? You know what I mean? This could happen to Social Security. There is no crisis that couldn't be corrected with a raise in the cap or paying a little more taxes, and that's 40, 50 years down the line. The truth of the matter is, this is what happens when money is put into pensions that are private investment funds.
Well, at this point, you know, the government is now going to be paying some, not all, of the pensions. In the case of U.S. Airways, which went through a similar situation, some of their pensioners ended up losing half their estimated benefits. Half.
Yeah.
Now, how do you plan for retirement if there's a possibility that half the money you planned on having isn't there? That's a cautionary lesson, as you very correctly point out, Mark, about what could happen with Social Security.
Well, this is the whole pitch. You know, there's so many people out there. There's an arrogance to people who consider themselves middle class. Someday the middle class will wake up and realize they're poor and that this is not an ownership society. It's a culture of debt. And the truth of the matter is if you're one of those people who's out there saying, hey, what kind of idiot, you know, relies completely on Social Security? That's a person that didn't act responsibly, didn't do what they were supposed to do with their money. Could be you. You're only one
one sickness away from being bankrupt. You have no protection anymore to declare bankruptcy. You might be depending on Social Security. You're only one family member away getting sick from, you know, from having no money whatsoever. You're only one, you know, bankrupt company away, if you work for them, from being compromised, you know, in the long run. It's a horrible reality what these Republicans are chipping away at, and that nobody has any protection. I don't know what the hell's going to happen to people.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Mark, this to me is an important ruling because it breaks what I think was seen by most workers as, in, you know, a compact that was not to be violated.
That's what people assume.
Yeah, because they put money toward their own pensions in many cases.
Yep. Let's take a quick call here. David in Kansas, what's on your mind?
Hi, David.
Hi. I just wanted to also comment, not only does this reflect on the Social Security issues that are going on, but also the bankruptcy bill that just passed. You've got people, if you're an ordinary schmo, you're going to have to pay money back if you go into bankruptcy now. You can't escape your debt.
Exactly.
But if you're a corporation, hey, guess what? You know, just walk away. Your CEO can still get his big pension, but the ordinary people are going to get slammed.
Right, so United is walking away, and this is going to be covered by the government because they're protected as a corporate person. A lot of people don't realize that corporations get more rights with this administration and in this country than individuals have.
Exactly, and that goes before a judge. Again, the judge issue at all those levels of the federal court that are trying to get passed, and not just Supreme Court people will have down the line.
Yeah.
But again, even if you know, take these things before the courts, now that they're putting their people all up and down the line in the federal court system, you'll get no relief there either.
Right, and because, you know, federal courts are less likely to hear personal cases over corporate cases, and they just made that ruling, is that you can't shop around anymore for states that will be sympathetic to your own private lawsuit, but they'll always be. The federal court's very sympathetic to corporate lawsuits.
Well, look,
right?
I just had
the corporation.
Yeah, I just had an epiphany. Yeah. If I ever do have to declare bankruptcy, I'm going to ask the government to make good on my debts.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, good luck.
Good idea.
It's not going to happen with this new legislation. Looks like the phone board's lit up. We didn't even ask for it, but we're happy you're calling. Maybe we'll take some calls over the top of the hour. We'll check out and see what you have to say. It's 57 past the hour here. So, Riley, we've got comedian Dean Obadalla coming up. I did want to talk about Afghanistan a little bit.
We're going to talk about Afghanistan. We got the iNews 5000. I think we may get a call or two. Let's go to it here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
At 6 past the hour, good morning, geniuses. It's Morning Sedition with Mark Maron, me, Mark Riley, over there.
Hi.
Good morning, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Wake up, sheeple. It's Thursday. How are you in New York if you're listening to 1190 WLIB? Good morning to you. Good morning to those of you who set their clock in the middle of the night just to listen to us on West Coast time because you have to. Thank you to the one guy I got an email from for taping us on cassette. Old school.
You can podcast.
If you want to go to morningsedition.com, that's available. You know, Riley, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Thank God we got this dumb machine. Huh, fellas? The iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's kick it up and put in some headlines. What do you say? Here we go. From the New York Times. Off-course plane prompts brief evacuation in the Capitol. Off-course plane prompts brief evacuation in the Capitol. Translation. FAA reminds D.C. area pilots large dome buildings mean turn around. Let's feed that to again. Off-course plane prompts brief evacuation in the Capitol. Here's a new one. Al-Qaeda begins practical joke offensive. Huh? From Fox News, conservatives to hold dinner for delay. Conservatives to hold dinner for delay. Translation, disciples gather for the Last Supper. Black blank. That's weird. From the Associated Press, monkeys escaped from Louisiana Primate Center. Monkeys escaped from Louisiana Primate Center. Officials fear fugitive apes will head to Bourbon Street, blend in. Okay, dig this. Okay, let's get into this, Riley. 2 days ago, the Taliban leader Mullah Muhammad Omar rejected an offer of amnesty from the government and ordered his men to battle on. The Taliban spokesman Abdul Latif Hakimi said the head of Afghanistan's Peace and Reconciliation Commission offered the amnesty on Monday. Quote, we don't need any guarantee of safety from the government, end quote. Okay?
We are the government.
Right. Mr. Hakimi said by telephone from an undisclosed location, quote, we're not hiding. Mullah Omar, our leader, is not hiding. Rather, he is fighting, end quote. Okay. So then, yesterday, we get reports that there are at least, you know, 4 people have been killed and 70 injured in protests in Jalalabad. Now, you know, of course, the press calls them riots. But, you know, what happens is that, you know, these were protests supposedly in response to Guantanamo Bay prisoners being tortured by the Koran being flushed down the toilet.
Yeah.
Now, this story broke. Honestly, the Koran story about the Koran in the toilet. Yeah, from August 4th, 2004. So why all of a sudden tomorrow protests around Guantanamo? I don't know how many people they talked to or what exactly is going on, but I'm willing to bet, Riley, I'm willing to speculate that on Monday when Mullah Omar said we're still fighting, word went out to his minions, and this protest was actually a flexing of the muscle of Taliban sympathizers and members of the Taliban and perhaps jihadists in the region, because some of these protests, you know, went on in Pakistan as well. This was basically a signal to me, you know, I don't know to who else, and I'm trying to put these things together, that things in that region are not stable. There's a lot going on in Afghanistan we don't know. We know that the opium business is up and running again. We know that the Taliban controls some areas of Afghanistan, and some of those are also controlled by warlords, and we don't hear a lot of this story. So I am thrilled that tomorrow former CIA member Gary Schroen will tell us about Afghanistan. He has a lot of theories as to why Osama escaped in Tora Bora and whether he will ever be captured. You know, I've heard him talk on I guess it was Meet the Press, about how, you know, Musharraf might be frightened to capture bin Laden. And certainly jihadists and Talibanis and Muslim extremists are certainly an ongoing threat. And this is how many years after the government of this country, you know, proposed to stabilize the situation? How many years has it been now since we left Afghanistan because we were using it as a gateway to Iraq? It's a gateway drug to Iraq.
Yeah, it was. And see, now I got to tell you, Mark.
Yeah.
I am one of those people that had you stopped me on the street and said, Mullah Omar, I would have said, well, he's locked up, isn't he?
Right.
That's how far off the radar this guy, who, by the way, in the initial invasion of Afghanistan, he was, along with Osama bin Laden, the target. And yet, here's a guy, he's been in hiding all. He's not in anybody's custody.
Yep.
He's up in the mountains either of Afghanistan or Pakistan. Pervez Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, is not going up into those mountains after the guy. And he's sending, I always find it fascinating that the Taliban has a spokesman. You know what I'm saying? Like they got PR people that actually, I guess, work for them or whatever. But the guy has been in hiding. The guy has not been touched. And the reason why people in this kind of situation do not end up getting touched, no matter how much of a reward they put out or whatever, is because they have a base of support somewhere.
Well, it's clear they have a base of support. I'm willing to bet that these protests were, you know, in direct response to his comment. I don't think they are a reaction. I believe that it was a suggestion, an order, a dispatch that went out among people, sympathizers and Talibanis that still operate in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, perhaps jihadists. And, you know, certainly I'm not happy about this. The reason that I'm trying to put these things together is because we get so much misinformation from the American press, and because that they are touting that, you know, the war in the region, or the war that, you know, we went into because of weapons of mass destruction and the reaction to 9/11 into Afghanistan, which, you know, many progressives, many liberals, many Democrats think it was a justified attack because that's where we believe bin Laden was.
Yeah.
Now, the truth of the matter is, clearly,
what hasn't been done is order has not been maintained or taken place in Afghanistan. Iraq is now literally, from most accounts, a complete horrific war zone. You know, dozens of people dying there every day. Pakistan is not stable. I mean, these are the realities years after.
Well, yeah, and these are realities that the Bush administration either did not anticipate or, and this is an important or, were told about and chose to ignore.
Yeah.
They knew that Pervez Musharraf had a serious Islamic fundamentalist problem inside his own country. They knew that Musharraf would have a great deal of difficulty actually going after Osama bin Laden because those same fundamentalists had tried to knock him off once or twice already.
Sure, and there's people within his intelligence community and within the military community in Pakistan that, you know, are sympathetic with the cause of Osama bin Laden. It's a very complicated bit of business there. It's something we certainly talked a lot about on this show for a period of time, and we go back to it, you know, fairly regularly. So tomorrow, if you're interested in hearing about what's going on in Afghanistan now and the status of Osama bin Laden, we have former CIA member Gary Sharon with us. Later in the show today, we have comic Dean Obadala. He's going to be performing in the Middle East, so I'm curious to hear him talk about
guts.
I'll say he's got guts, and you know he does a lot of interesting work. He is half Arab and half Sicilian, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's I haven't seen him in a while. It'll be interesting to talk to him. Now, when we come back, you know, what do you want to go with, Riley? You want to talk a little bit about?
You want to talk about old Dr. Hager? We promoted him about 2 hours ago.
David Hager, he's a doctor who was. Advising the Food and Drug Administration. The word was out on this guy a while ago. I remember when people started talking about him because he was the guy that wrote books for women, talking about how prayer is a good antidote for menstrual cramps. His books, As Jesus Cared for Women, Restoring Women Then and Now, Stress and the Women's Body, has been blatantly and aggressively accused by his ex-wife of forcibly
some heinous stuff, actually.
Forcefully sodomizing her again and again and again, raping her
but
for
you know,
years.
Mark,
marital rape, years and years. This is a guy that hangs out with James Dobson.
Well, yeah, he's God's gynecologist.
This is King Hypocrite is what it is, and you know he is what's at the heart. The repression and the denial and the fear of the Christian right looks like the behavior of this guy.
Ooh.
We'll talk a little bit about it when we come back, 15 past the hour.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, professional wrestler and best-selling author, and you're listening to the two guys who give the right wing the smackdown. It's Mark Maron and Mark Riley with Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're hoping to get the writer of this article that appeared in The Nation today on Dr. W. David Hager. Hopefully we'll get her tomorrow. There's a possibility of it. A prominent obstetrician, gynecologist, and Bush administration appointee to the Advisory Committee for Reproductive Health Drugs in the Food and Drug Administration. He was, he spoke on the pulpit. He was a friend of Rush Limbaugh's brother, David?
What's his name? That's it.
Who wrote the book, Persecution, How Liberals Are Waging Political War Against Christianity. Yeah, this guy's a real Christian guy. He's now being accused by, this is a writer of As Jesus Cared for Women, Restoring Women Then and Now, and the other book, Stress and the Woman's Body. He is being accused by his wife of forcibly having sodomizing her over years and years, repeatedly, of putting her in the position where she was, asked, he would pay her for sex that she wasn't willing to do. He wanted to photograph her during sexual exploits. This is part of the Christian, this is a Christian right ideologue. This is a guy that was held up as a poster boy for the Christian right by our president. And if this behavior, if these allegations are true, which I believe them to be, this reveals the dark side, the shame, the fear, the repression, the lies, the hypocrisy of Christian fanaticism on the level of leadership. This guy was a leader. This is beautiful stuff from where I'm standing from. I feel bad for her. You know, I don't have much sympathy for him because he's a hypocrite and a liar. But, you know, this is a guy who, you know, he's a heinous example of a person. You know, where does that come from? To where you don't even, you know, to where you're so shamed and so screwed up. I wouldn't be surprised if he was, you know, somebody who was completely sexually confused, perhaps a severely closeted homosexual, clearly somebody who has a certain amount of contempt for women, preaching the word of Christ in how women should behave in the world, sodomizing his wife forcefully over years and years and years. Unbelievable.
Look, completely believable. We are at a point where I have to ask the question of the religious right. Now, how much hypocrisy are you people prepared to dish out? How much hypocrisy are you prepared to tolerate? Those of you who may have come under their spell under false pretenses, you have to at some point be able to say to folks, look, these people wear their Christianity on their sleeve, too many of them, because they have something to hide, because they have some skeletons in their closet that if exposed to daylight would turn them into dust. And the fact of the matter is that an awful lot of people who are who have a religious conscience don't wear their Christianity or their Judaism or their practicing of Islam on their sleeves like these guys do. There's a reason why they do this.
This type of behavior, it wouldn't really surprise me if just a regular Republican was doing it. But the fact that this was a religion, I really like it when these people, the arrogance of it, like that mayor. That mayor from Washington.
West. Jim West.
The arrogance that comes along with, you know, he's being accused of molesting boys.
Yes.
Right? He's a closeted homosexual that was, you know, hiding that. He was actually trying to pass legislation, you know, against homosexuals, against gay people. And this is, he's another great example of how that repression and that, you know, that shame plays out in the world of everyone else, especially when you're a politician. And this guy Hager, a religious spokesperson,
yeah,
doing this type of stuff, you know, and writing, the irony is so devastating and so perfect. You know, I hope to God this thing blows up big. I hope to God that we get the writer on here, because I can't even, you know, I don't want to even get into this because it's so juicy and so sick and so good.
Well, it's salacious in the extreme. But see, what Hagar represents, Dr. Hager, represents is this side of Christianity, this whole promise keeper, evangelical belief that the woman is supposed to, quote, submit to their husband. And in return for that, they'll get security, they'll get this, they'll get that. And it is, I hate to say this, Mark, but it is the same philosophy that pimps have been using from day one to get women out in the street hooking for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same mindset. I'll take care of everything as long as you submit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's what's at the root of the way this man treated his ex-wife.
Well, this is like, it's one thing to submit is one thing, but this is, you know, and you're right, you know, violent sexual abuse.
There you go. And by the way, a felony in the state of Kentucky where all this stuff allegedly happened.
The Kentucky
statutes are very clear about what this man allegedly did.
And Dan Passman just dropped a story in our lap, too, if we could switch gears to John.
Oh, this ain't switching gears.
Well, it's switching. It's
people.
This is a regular Republican.
Yeah.
This is a neocon. This is, you know, John Bolton.
Yeah.
What does it say, Riley?
Well, you know, I wish we would have been able to ask Chris Shades about this. This is according to Raw Story. Larry Flint has gotten involved in the John Bolton confirmation battle, which, by the way, is coming to a head supposedly later today. Apparently, records show that John Bolton's wife left him during a trip to Vienna in two weeks in 1982, never returned. The records show that she took most of the couple's furniture. Larry Flint is alleging that part of the problem that forced Christina Bolton to bolt had to do with the fact that apparently John Bolton allegedly paid visits to Plato's Retreat. I know a little bit about Plato's Retreat.
Now, let's also say that the State Department not denying the story.
Not denying the story. Plato's Retreat, for those of you who don't know or don't remember, was a swingers club that existed on the Upper West Side of Manhattan here in New York City. It was a place where couples went to have open and, in some cases, group sex.
Mm.
That's pretty much. And see, also, there were hookers that made a little money.
This is a regular Republican behavior. The repressed, weird Christian right Republican, you know, forcibly sodomizing his wife repeatedly.
Yeah, I mean, this is such reprehensible behavior. Now,
how do you know about Plato's Retreat exactly?
I DJ'd there a few times. I DJ'd at Plato's. I was a very close friend of a guy that was the regular DJ there.
How many times has this happened? Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I was caught up. Let me put this record on.
No, you'd always get people who wanted you to play a Donna Summer song because the bass was jumping so long.
Wow, this is the Riley's Back
My
in the Day.
My Secret Life, okay?
The chapters of Back in the Day.
Yeah, it was there, and I also worked at a place called Midnight Interlude that was pretty much
the history of New York.
We're
going to have to dedicate a show to that. Dean Obadala is going to be funny after this, so stay with us here on Air America Radio.
America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Sir America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We just got our snacks.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking forward to tomorrow already, the City Bakery stuff. And that's ridiculous.
That's City Bakery.
Since our we should put the order in now. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone once again is Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. It's been a while. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, good morning, Mark. God's driving an ice cream truck, but he's not giving away free gum.
All right.
Okay? No free gum today.
All right, buddy.
Not from God.
All right. So now, you know the Bush administration is trying to clamp down on PBS. You understand that, right?
Oh, yes. Amen to that. It's about time, too. You know what PBS stands for?
What?
Precious, biased, slanted. Or
come on.
Pretty, boring stuff.
Please.
Well, how about Public's been swindled.
What are you talking
about? PBS, Public's been swindled.
What does that mean, swindled how?
Mark, I can't trust any network that doesn't have commercials interrupting the shows every night.
What does that even
you know,
mean?
That way, you know who's calling the shots. That's an insult to corporate America right there.
Oh, my
Slap
God.
Slap in the face.
Lawton,
no commercials.
Lawton,
bam.
Lawton, there's no commercials because it's publicly owned.
No.
That's the whole point. PBS is for all of us.
It's not for me.
Huh?
We pour our tax dollars into this thing, and what do we get in return? A poo-poo platter of liberal bias right down our throats.
Stop
well,
it.
Well, it's time we pushed away from the table and said, no, thanks.
Oh, come
I'm
on.
Full.
Come on. Lawton, you seem pretty worked up over this.
Oh.
There's got to be something on PBS you like. What about Nova?
Oh, that's a bunch of God-hating scientists is all that is. If you've seen one quasar, you've seen them all.
All right, back. How about what Ken Burns' documentary?
Oh,
huh?
Mr. Doom and Gloom.
Oh, stop
that
it.
Man took all the fun out of the Civil War.
Oh, come
you
on.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and if you listen to him, you'd think there was racism in baseball.
Oh, my God. What are you...
Crazy idea.
You're amazing. How about Masterpiece Theater, huh?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't America win the Revolutionary War?
Come on.
That means I shouldn't turn on my TV and see a bunch of Englishmen running around in knee socks
and
shoes.
Oh, my God.
Jane Austen's got nothing to say to the Smalls household.
Oh, my
I'm
God.
I'm saying that.
Right, how about...
And you.
Hey, how about... Buddy, how about the News Hour with Jim Lehrer? Okay?
Whoa, that
right?
goes so far to the left. You might as well have Ted Kennedy up there reading
Oh,
news.
Stop it.
Their
Come
stories
on.
Are so long. What's the point?
Oh.
People don't need that much information. Look at Fox. Short and sassy, read by three young women. Nothing too depressing. Jim Lehrer, that old boy looks like the Crypt.
Come on.
That old Jim Lehrer.
I can assume you're against the Teletubbies.
Oh, no, Mark. I love them. I have posters of them all over my bedroom. Please. That is the gay agenda in its naked form.
Oh, yeah, right.
Do not
yes.
mention them.
Yeah, the Teletubby, the gay agenda. That's what the gay agenda looks like naked, a Teletubby.
How about, green
what about, what do you got to say about Sesame Street?
Come again?
What about Sesame Street? You know, the kids show, Sesame Street.
Mark, Sesame Street's not on PBS, is it?
Of course it is. It's a beloved show watched by two generations of kids, and you Republicans are going to get in there and screw it up with your phony ideology and your hate mongering.
Sesame Street?
Yeah, what's the matter? You're a Sesame Street fan?
I like all of it. I like Ken Burns. I like Nova.
All right.
I love
okay?
Barney, snuffle up against an Oscar. He lives in the trash.
I know.
I can't believe my old Barney would want to hurt Big Bird. What did Big Bird do to them? They wouldn't know the alphabet if it weren't for him.
Take it easy, man. I had no idea that you were such a big fan. I understand. We all love the Sesame Street. Yeah, I understand, man. Take it easy.
Big Bird.
Okay. All right. You okay?
NASCAR. You know, that's what PBS needs, and that's what PBS is going to get. Goodbye, Mr. Rogers.
Right.
Hello, Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Goodbye, what?
NASCAR.
Goodbye.
God loves you. Deal with it.
I'm trying.
Deal with it.
All right, all right.
Bye-bye.
Wow, unbelievable. Mm. The ups and downs of Watt and Smalls.
Wow.
Right now, in the studio, a friend, a fellow stand-up comedian. He was just in the Middle East. He's going to go do a show in Dubai. You're half Arab, half Sicilian.
Right,
yes.
Half Palestinian, half Sicilian.
Give us some of your TV credits.
They're CNN, Inside the Middle East,
there
Comedy Central, Comedy Central,
Inside the Middle East.
Inside, that's where most comics aspire to be on, CNN, Inside the Middle East, and ABC's 2020.
Oh, Madala, that's interesting, because you get to go into both worlds. You get to do stand-up, and then you get to be the one guy that does that.
Right, it's kind of weird.
There's a few of you, though. There's a few Arab-American
There's five
comics.
Or six of us wandering freely at this point, but we're not sure how long that'll continue. So new Patriot Act gets passed, I think we're gone.
It's all going away.
Every night in a camp.
There was a grenade right next to Bush's seat the other day.
I have nothing to do with that. I've already issued a statement. I checked with all my people. I have nothing to do with it.
I wasn't suggesting, but, yeah, thanks for clearing that up.
I mean, I think also, I mean, just being of Arab heritage influences the way you look at the news. Yesterday with that airplane, people were watching the plane. You have your own thoughts. Don't want to be a terrorist act and stuff. I keep thinking, please don't let the Palestinian be Mustafa or Muhammad.
Right.
You're like, please let it be like some white guy named Skeeter. And it turns out those guys, Troy and Jim, they just let them go. They're like, all right, sorry. If their names were Omar and Bassam, they're on their way to Guantanamo. I mean, it's not like, everything changed. You know, white people are lucky. As a group, you never suffer for the sins of a few. This happens, no one gets in trouble. Timon McVeigh, Oklahoma City, there was no Operation Hillbilly after that. So you're lucky if you're white. I'm half white, so I can pass.
You can go either way at this.
I can, and you try to hide.
It's okay to just use your first name. Dean.
Well, Dean is based on an Arabic name, Salahuddin.
Okay.
Which is in the movie now.
You should have kept that. That's
you
a
just
much
ruined your career.
It's a compelling stage name.
No, legally it's Dean. Because my mother had vision to know.
I want this career. I want this kid to have a career in life.
Right. She did. My mother wants Salahuddin. My mom's like, how's Dean?
How about that? What is it with they say they caught the third ranking guy in Al-Qaeda. How many third ranking guys are there?
I think it's like the equivalent of being assistant manager at Wendy's. There's like a thousand. They're all over the place. I think if you get recruited in Al-Qaeda, there's Bin Laden, there's a number two guy, and then you join, like, what number am I? Like, third? Okay, I'm third. I join. It sounds good to me. I can be third. This is great. You know,
a lot of thirds.
But what happened to Bin Laden, though? That's honestly, no one talks about Bin Laden. I think Americans have lost interest. I think the next time you'll see Bin Laden, he's a has-been. I think next time you'll see him, he'll be like a cast member on VH1 Surreal Life. Like him and Flavor Flav and Bridget Nielsen in the hot tub.
Ooh.
The bass player from the Def Leppard.
There's a threesome I paid to see.
I hope they don't touch each other. But, no, but it's the truth. Where is Bin Laden? He'll get a TV show.
I believe he's. I actually believe he's in the basement of the White House.
Do you think so?
Sure. They just send a crew down there when they need a new tape.
Well, where is this tape? They used to come out once a month, remember? It's like we joined some Middle Eastern Colombia house. Every month they're going to Bin Laden tape. You try it out, see if you like it. Send it back, no obligation.
So now you actually go perform in the Middle East.
I have. In the last year, I've been there twice, and I'm going back. I did a show in Ramallah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great gig. I
hear it's a big comedy town.
Gutsy but lucrative.
I can get you there. I can't promise you safety. I'm sure they like it, though. Ramallah was a great deal of fun. It really was 200 people. Well, amazingly, and in Beirut, I did a show in Beirut. Beirut's amazing. American University of Beirut. And people
I hear another hilarious big comedy scene.
Beirut's amazing.
I heard we actually had a reporter from Beirut said it's really cutting edge. Yes,
no, it is. It's really a lot of fun. You would have a great time there. I did did a show in Haifa in March.
I've been to Haifa in Israel.
Right, yeah. Of course. I don't say that name, but still, you know. in the Zionist entity, no, of course, right. Israel.
All right.
But I know, what a career. I'm kidding. Of course, it's all jokes.
I'm going to get you a million Jewish people calling
How
me up.
How dare you?
No, it's a Haifa. But they speak less English in Haifa in Israel proper because English is third. Arabic, it's Hebrew first and Arabic second and English third. So it was a much smaller town in Ramallah. And in Beirut, English is second. You know, it's like Arabic and then English there.
Do you speak any other languages, Dean?
I speak. I feel like I'm being questioned. Very sinister, but you're listening to me.
Slahadin.
I was like, the size of it. Speak now. I'm fifth ranking guy. You know, I think moved up to third. I speak a little Arabic. I do a couple of jokes. I speak actually probably more Italian, but I've been learning more Arabic, and it's.
So do you open with the Arabic stuff when you're in the Middle East?
The only thing I do a joke about being of mixed background, and I say Abui Falastini in the Mejnuni, which means my father's Arabic, my mother's crazy. So that, and they get that as being Italian.
Do they laugh? Is that the same timing?
They do. You know what? Amazingly serious, they all laugh at the Bush jokes.
Yeah.
Unbelievably. Everywhere.
Why wouldn't they?
They all get it. Because the only things they lose are little specific American pop culture references. Besides that, and even that, most of they get because of TV and cable and the satellite. They all watch TV.
So what happened in Haifa?
Haifa did a show in this place for two. It was fun. It was like, that was a smaller crowd. It was like 60 or 70 people. But I went to go visit a friend and did a show there. She lives in Haifa.
Is there a thriving comedy scene like in Beirut? Are there young comics sitting around smoking like Dave Attell? Like, you know, like
high-quality Lebanese.
You know, like Wednesday nights, the open mic night here, you know, just getting on.
People, they recruit them like, hey, you're funny, come here. Here's the microphone. Do you have some jokes? Come on, be funny.
Very funny. You're a number seven in that.
You just moved up. I keep worrying about one day I'll be arrested, and they'll say, like, he kept saying emails, he was the comedian about a comedy show.
That's your alias?
The
comedian. Right there, you're going to have one of those horrible pictures. Yeah, every one of those pictures, have you noticed that, like, for some reason, the mugshots, you look at them, you're like, oh, my God, of course that guy's a terrorist.
Am I wrong? I think that they all look like, you know, on some level, but I know you have the big eyes, like the kind of scary.
Well, obviously, they've been beat up, they've been tortured, they've been up for 3 days, and they're mussed up. But, you know, I always notice that when I see the picture, that it's like, oh, my, couldn't they take
a better picture?
Yeah.
Should be an Al-Qaeda photographer.
Yeah, why is isn't there a guy that does a little, you know, shit them at least?
He's like Spears in Beirut.
Like you turn that weird way.
One of the family albums.
Like when you sit for a school picture, like you turn to the side and you're looking kind of over your shoulder and your neck's kind of up like that. Okay, perfect.
Yeah. I think that's a great thing to do. I think the rest of the Al-Qaeda guys must be in Iraq. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the top three, we keep arresting the third one. Al-Qaeda's got to be flourishing in Iraq. Iraq is insane. I can't believe people run for office in Iraq. That's what's amazing.
Well, they announced the cabinet, didn't they?
Yeah, it's all done.
But I can't believe there was actually competition to be president of that. I mean, what a life changing, life shortening job. I mean, I kept trying to picture the campaign commercial, like, hello, my name is Walid. I'm running for president of Iraq. My fellow Iraqis, please do not vote for me. I don't want to die. You know, we should vote for Samir. He is the smart one.
They did try to blow up somebody's car. Was it the prime minister or the president?
Yeah.
Many people. The governor. One after. That's why I think they have two or three vice presidents, and there's a reason. So you're moving up pretty quickly.
Yeah. So I just thought of something weird is that the guy's actually saying he's running is not the actual guy running. You always know it's one of the guys around him. So you're just voting for some general guy that's in the picture. So where are you going next?
I'm actually going to be in Dubai.
Oh, I love that thought. Let's talk about that trip. You've been there before?
No, Dubai is the first time. That's in the Arab Emirates. I've never been there. I have no connection.
I just saw a big tourist brochure on that. They're really pushing Dubai. I'd like to know a little more about it. So let's talk to Dino Vidal when we come back. More about his trip to the Middle East and the one coming up. 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks. Hey, it's 50 past the hour. We're going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We've got comedian Dino Vidal here. In the other room, just adjacent to this, is Sam Cedar, who's subbing for Jerry Springer. Don't look in there, Dean. I know you've been on a show a couple of times. He's trying to do a very serious thing in there.
Why am I hearing him?
Why
am I hearing Sam Cedar in my head? Is everyone else hearing it?
Mark, now let me ask you a question. Are you the stewardess on this flight?
Yes, I am. No, I am the pilot, Sam. I am the pilot, and that's how I tag my last 10 minutes. I'm sorry, I have style, and I don't just yell and say, hey, what's burning today? How am I going to try to save the world? I'm serious, Sam Seeger. I'm in business. Listen, I'm reaching out to the blogosphere. Please like me.
I'll tell you what, Mark, I'm holding in my hand the Tuesday's Arbitron overnights.
I am looking at
the show, and for the first 2.5 hours, it's flatlined.
Uh-huh.
I come in, it spikes.
Wait, I got it right here in my head. Wait, hold up. We don't work overnights.
What? Oh no, these are no.
You said
these,
it was the overnights.
These are the Arbitron.
We work mornings, pal.
Wait. Back up. What Sam's doing here? It's interesting because see, Sam gets their show gets good ratings, but you have to realize that the hour they're on, 4 people listen. So if 3 people listen, that's like a 9.0, whatever the ratings are. here in the morning when we're competing with the big guns, you know, not just competing with people eating. It's a little more difficult, but I appreciate what you're trying to do, Sam, and I'm glad you're having a lot of success with students and whoever else listens to your show. And I think that I'm kidding.
I've a great show. I've been lucky enough to be on that show a few times.
Dino Adele, it's been great having you.
They're more serious than you guys.
Go do your. They're more serious. What do you? Of course, that's what they say. That's their slogan. Majority Report. We're more serious than you guys.
We just don't have enough neuroses between the two of us to compete with Mark.
That's the problem. Look at like they went. Who
you know, I got to stand up for my homie.
He doesn't
have any more insecurities or whatever than any normal white guy.
Yeah. No. Sam is.
Well, you haven't been around a lot of normal white guys.
I know.
Sam has spent a life masquerading as a non-neurotic Jew. And I think it's very impressive. And you're doing a great job, and you're fooling some of them.
Thank you.
I'm going to finish with my guest. Have you had enough attention? Is this the Sam Seder Network? Do you mind if I talk to my guest, Sam?
Does he go on every show now?
I think so, yes.
Sitting in for Al Franken today.
He's been desperately rallying to get his ratings up with the 9 people that listen to him. When are you on? 11 at night?
We just pushed it to 11 people.
So at that hour, out of the 15 that listen across the board, you're doing very well.
That's right. We're beating
Dan Rather?
No, Michael Savage and Laura Ingraham.
Well, that's good, actually. Are you beating them?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
but Laura Ingraham's been sick, man. She don't count.
York? She wasn't sick in Winter Book, was she?
This is in New York. Yeah.
Oh, Lord. We're going to talk about when did she find out she had breast cancer?
Oh, does she have breast cancer?
Yes.
Oh, well, I guess...
Yeah, we've
gone right back into a serious...
No. Okay, here we go. Thanks for sucking the wind out of my show. All right, I'll see you later, Sam.
Bye, Sam.
Anytime you want to drain the end of my show, feel free to do that.
Speaking of drain, I got something here. We got to talk about this.
Well, we got to finish with Dean, my friend.
What
are you looking at?
The Wizinator. But we'll do that another day.
Wizinator. So, John Bolton is about...
Sometimes.
Usually I breaks and then it trickles over sometimes. Go to my website.
Trickles?
Well, what's the Wizinator? Anyway, Dean Bolton.
Dean Bolton.
He might be confirmed today.
He might be. I think Bush really likes him. Honestly, this is the reason. People have different reasons. Because Bush can pronounce his name. That's what he likes about that.
That's clear. Bolton.
He says Bolton. I like that guy. Bolton. Did you see a week and a half ago he pointed Admiral Giambastiani as a second joint chief? Did you see the press conference when he announced him? I'm not exactly. I'm going to call you Admiral G. That's what he said. That's why I think he likes Sharon. Eric Sharon was just here, which he probably calls him Sharon. Did you see Sharon when he was here 2 weeks ago? See, he's getting bigger by the day. I think he's eating Palestinians. And apparently they're high in carbs.
He's trying to get as big as Israel. It's going to be Sharon sitting there.
That's why the settlements get bigger, so he can fit.
With Palestinians in his hands, and he's shaking them.
Put him in the mouth. I have to do one Sharon joke. I have to every time I go.
Yeah, so now you're going to Dubai.
It's
supposed to be beautiful.
There was an article in Time Sunday. They call it the Oz of the Middle East. It's unbelievable. It's like Las Vegas. It's gaudy. It's garish.
Uh-huh.
It's like Vegas, like an American thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to fly out there to do a show for an organization which I can't name. And I'm just going
Al Qaeda?
No, Hamas. But you guys almost got it. It's for a charity, seriously, for a legitimate charity. And getting flown out there with another comic, Ahmed from LA.
I know him.
Do you know Ahmed?
Yeah, there's only three of you guys. There's really? Ahmed, there's you, and then there's the guy, Jal Gibrani.
Maz Gibrani. And then got Aaron Cater and Mason Zion.
Aaron Cater and Hood. Yeah, Hood, I think.
Hood, Ahmed.
He's still doing it. Oh, that doesn't count.
No, not my world.
They're ostracizing. All right, Nihal Madala, thank you very much. Have a good time. I wish I could plug in Dubai. If you're listening in Dubai, is it open to the public?
I think it's open to the public.
All right, for those of you who are just tuning in or didn't get to hear the whole show, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. The White House, the Capitol, and the Supreme Court are evacuated, and fighter jets are scrambled as an errant plane flies into restricted airspace. When officers burst into the Senate and yelled at Tom DeLay to leave, he said, "Don't I at least get a hearing first?" All right. But there was some good news. The president managed to complete his entire bike ride without getting his pants caught in the chain or falling off once. How about that? The White House says an inactive grenade found near a site of Bush speech in Georgia doesn't represent a threat to the president. The service said the president was in no danger. The grenade wasn't a threat. An inactive grenade we can handle. If you want to talk about threats to the president, try picking up his record on the economy in Iraq and disarming that. Yes. A British study says iPods can make you deaf. Audiologists warned that the repeated listening at high volume could lead to tinnitus, or more seriously, walking oblivious into oncoming traffic-itis.
Whoa.
Nothing. I can't finish these now, Riley. What do we got?
We got Ben Folds tomorrow.
That's right, and the Wizinator, apparently.
And the Wizinator. We'll talk about that here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.